Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
All right, welcome to the Knife Talk, podcast for knife makers, knife enthusiasts, DIYers, and everybody else. I'm Jeff Fader, Fader Knives, with the great Mareko Momasi, Momasi Fire Arts, and the stalwart, unsinkable Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives. How's everybody?
You say unsinkable.
You're unsinkable.
I'm floundering in the water at the moment.
Come on, man.
Don't die, Jack. I'm pretty bad. Let's start with Mareko. How are things?
Good. The week has been feels very productive. Got a bunch of knives sent out. I just finished up actually a knife that I did kind of like a teaser on the pattern. I think today I'm going to post some pictures later of the finished thing. But the mosaic pattern.
Did you come up with a name for that after? Because I know you were asking for a name for that one.
Yeah, I went with Fiddle Fern. That was kind of my goal. The customer was actually wanting a pattern more fern-like. And I had done something that he liked, but he was wanting it a bit more dense. And so that's what I ended up going with. But yeah, I got a ton of really good name.
Did you get a ton of really bad names too?
I also got a lot of bad ones for sure.
I was going to ask the same one. But the same thing.
It's interesting. Just thinking of, just seeing the different names, I was like, oh, I don't see that for this pattern, but in my head I could see a pattern that would have that name, and it gave me some ideas for some different pattern concepts. But anyways, I got that thing sent out, finished up. It was spick and span, and it was probably I think this is the new best handle finish I've ever achieved on a knife. It came out just absolutely gorgeous. I also built a custom fit open back Saya that went along with that, and there were a few bumps with that thing, but I finally got it tuned up and I didn't have to start over, thank fucking God. And so yeah, got it all finished out and sent out the door. Other than that, it's just been kind of trying to let people know about the calendars and that the calendars are out. And we've been getting some emails, like people saying, oh, is it too late to order the calendar? It's not too late. We're trying to encourage people, if you want to get a calendar and you want it by the beginning of the year, you want to order it sooner than later.
Now.
Order it now. But we will be selling them also after the start of the year too. It's just calendars are a lot more handy when they're used for the entire year. And as well as the aprons, trying to let people know about the aprons as well, and posting up some stuff and sharing other people's stuff back out. People are starting to receive them and they're wearing them and using them, and they're looking great in the aprons. And Jeff, thank you for posting about the apron, helping share and support me in that way. And I really appreciate everybody who's using them, and there's been nothing but positive feedback, which is really great. What I've been really loving is seeing how people are loading up like the chest pockets. Cause like I said before, there's like 14 pockets in the chest for various scribe tools and pencils and pens and wrenches and whatever else you want to throw in there. And it's been really interesting to see how people are loading those up and really making use of the apron. Cause I love seeing them being used. It's not just a good looking thing. It's But again, the idea was to make like basically a tool belt that covers your chest as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's super handy, and it's fun to see people using it. But other than that, it's just been a pretty straightforward week. I actually have somebody coming to take a class with me soon. Oh. So I have a bit of cleaning to focus on this coming week. But I'm also going to be doing some blade forging and some more knife making as well. Just kind of standard stuff. And sheetrocking. I'm going to be doing some sheetrocking maybe Sunday. That should be fun.
Ugh.
I'm not mudding or anything. I'm just putting the rock.
Welcome to my world at the moment.
Yeah. I'm fine with it. I need the material, and the hard part's been getting a hold of the landlord. He's been kind of going through health stuff himself, and so. But yeah. I just talked to him today. We're gonna get some sheetrock in here. I'm gonna do it all. I don't need anybody's help. I just need it up so I can get shelves on the wall and get shit off the floor, because right now I have just stuff strewn across the shop, and it's just because I have nowhere to put it. It's stuff that belongs here. There's just nowhere to put it, and it's driving me crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeff, your signature series, they went out. They were sold. They've been shipped. They look awesome.
It was quite a week, ladies and gentlemen. It was quite a week. It was interesting because it was something we had been talking about on a couple meetings before, and I just came up with the idea. I was like, look, I'm just going to knock out 10 knives for Christmas on top of everything else, and we'll give it a try. We'll see how it goes, and encourage people to join the newsletter, and Allison and Tony did just a ton of work behind the scenes, and getting a newsletter up and figuring out, changing the website a little bit and figuring out how we're going to do it. And it was a lot of back office stuff. And I kind of just kept on chugging along, and it was great. So yeah, it was, Tony named it. It was like, I was kind of going with some different colors and I was really happy with it. And we're going to use Neptune. It's called, Tony named it Neptune Sunrise. And I loved that name. Mm. And it's just like, names to me are very important. And you know, like, bubblegum lift ticket and all that shit. And I sculpture names, like, to me, I met a glass blower years ago, and I might have mentioned him before, and he's talked about how important naming things is. Mm. And I really do believe that, you know, especially with sculpture or art or whatever, naming is important. So I really always love names. And so we came up with that name, and then what we're going to do is that's going to be the signature series Color Lab Color of 2022. So we're going to be doing a lot of drops, including different drops of different knives. And people got the opportunity to buy a set, and they'll be getting each piece through the year as I build them. So it's almost like an advent calendar. Gosh. It was an idea that the guys, Tony and Allison, had, and I really like it. And we're going to do a couple of those, and that was really good. The interesting thing is, from the knife making standpoint, is, you know, it was great. I mean, not having to, you know, getting them out the door and not having to like think, all right, now I got to make them, was amazing. It was just like a little bit weird, to be honest. Usually it's like, now the dread sets in and I actually have to like make them. But this was like all 10 went out fast, and it was great. The interesting thing was, is we came up with this idea, and I know that a lot of people, what they'll do is they'll put it on their website and they'll announce it at whatever, 9 o'clock a.m., it's up on the website. What we decided that we were going to try to do is we were going to try to put a link in the newsletter, so it would make it more exclusive to newsletter people, so, which was great, and we kind of beta checked it, and everything was fine. So 8 o'clock in the morning, Allison's texting me just like, I'm, you know, the day we're going to put it out, she's losing her. I mean, she's like nauseous. She's like, I don't know what's going to happen. I hope I didn't fuck up. She was saying to me, I'm really kind of sick to my stomach. And I'm like, it'll be fine. Don't worry. It'll be fine. And she's like, I hope I put the names in right. I hope I put the name. You know, she's been doing the newsletter, you know, in all the whatever. So all of a sudden, 9 o'clock rolls around, and I didn't get the email. 901, 902, 903. And 903, I sent a message to Allison. I was like, did you get the email? And she's just throwing up, just nauseous.
Oh,
so we
what,
were
what
noticing,
service are you using for the emails? Is
well,
it
we were,
Squarespace's own thing? Or?
We were using this suite that they like. So I'm not going to name the names. But so what happened was, some of the people were not getting the newsletter. They were getting, the newsletter was getting sent out in waves.
Yeah.
So people weren't getting him exactly at 9 a.m. And we did some research, and Allison did some research, and because people are sending me messages like, I haven't got the email yet. We also gave the opportunity to pre-order them. So, like, if you didn't get the part of this 10, you can get some, and it'll be in a couple months, the new ones will be out. So it turns out that the service we had, we sent them a message, and they wrote us this fucking long email on why, how they send stuff out. And, well, when a customer puts out a lot of newsletters, we get suspicious. So we kind of, like, you know, go through them and send them out in 15-minute waves. And we're just like, fuck you. Just kind of like, it was like, it wasn't
optimal. It's quite normal for any service to do that, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. It's quite normal for most Muslims.
Craig, is that right?
It is right. Can you hear
me? All right, well, we now know. So we're going to be not putting the link into the newsletter anymore. We just have to. But it's interesting because the difference between the people who buy knives from me on Instagram versus not Instagram who use the newsletter. I got people on the newsletter. When I put stuff on the newsletter, they buy. It is totally different. I don't know how you kind of like put them all together. So
yeah, that's weird because I feel like when we send out our MailChimp, it goes out to everybody all at once. And we start getting data on immediately as to who's opening and who's seeing them and whatnot.
Well,
it's quite technical, but the way they'll go out in batches separately, but they may be synced in time via different servers and stuff. But it's quite normal.
Yeah, so we're gonna investigate that and realize that maybe that's not the best way to do it, or find some service that, you know, sends it out in one wave. Fine. So, but the weird thing was, everything went out fine, and as soon as I went back from the mailbox, I went right back to work. There was no patting yourself on the back at all. So I'm back in the Christmas frenzy. But I do have a funny story that irritated the shit out of me, which will hopefully irritate. If I'm irritated, it's good for you guys. So a number of months ago, this organization that I deal with. Asked me if I would do this video. They're doing this series of videos for their whatever of the unromantic side of the life of a craftsperson. So I said, you want unromantic? Come to the shop. No problem. Like, the shop was a fucking wreck. I would look like shit. And then they filmed me, you know, and I actually was like hand sanding and I was saying, you know, people think it's so much fun. And I cut myself accidentally on film, which they kept in. So they made this whole thing and I'm like, hey, I don't know what the fucking people think that the knife making is. It was like, you know, I said, you want unromantic? I'm going to give you unromantic. So I got they sent me a message saying, wow, we got the video. The video is great. Can we do a Zoom call to talk to you about it? I'm like, what do you have to talk to me about? So I got on a Zoom call and they showed me the video and it's funny. It's like 2 minutes, 3 minutes. It's funny. It's funny. And then they started asking me questions like, how do you see yourself using this video? I'm like, I don't know. I'll throw it in my stories, put in my highlight. I don't know. Do you think that you'd be interested in paying for more video content? paying for more video content. Paying for more video. Absolutely not. No. I said, this is not. Well, you know, we do content creation. I'm like, hey, listen, I don't mean to do that. I don't mean to be an asshole.
You did the content creation.
Check my fucking numbers, bitch. I mean, it was like, I mean, you ain't doing nothing. And I just turned to him and I didn't say bitch, but I did say to him, like, look, you guys don't do any promotion for me. You don't do zero. You do zero. Why would I pay for you to do promotion? Why would I pay for you to make videos for me? And then they started talking kind of like corporate speak. Oh, yeah. That's very interesting. Okay. You know, I'll, like, you'll put a pin in it and we'll blue light it and all that bullshit.
Look back at you later.
Oh, dude. There was like, he's like, and then they said, do you have anybody you think that would be interested in having video content made? And I'm thinking, oh, yeah. That's just what I need. I need to have my name attached to a fucking call list. And I'm like, and I said to her, no, I don't. And she goes, okay, that's very helpful. And I was just like, no, it wasn't helpful at all. I don't want it. I'm not paying you. You guys don't. And it was hilarious because I just started getting really irritated. And I was like, I get volatile in those situations. So I had to like hold back a little bit because the owner of the company is a friend of mine. But I got fucking hustled, guys.
So what's happening with that video now? Where will it be?
I'll put it up at some point when it comes out. I mean, I'm making light of it, and they did a good job. And but it was like, you know, I ain't paying, that's for sure.
The,
you know,
I mean, drug dealers.
That wasn't part of the plan.
Drug dealers of video content. They give you a little
taste. These are fine.
And then they make you pay for more.
I'm making light of it. Here's the interesting thing for a lot of, you know, what you want to call yourself, a content creator or not, is you're far more interesting than a lot of these companies seem to think they need to make you be. Like, you probably do more than they expect they'll be able to do anyway.
Yeah.
But it was like the owner of the company is a good dude, a friend of mine, and, you know, his lackeys were just like, you know, I think they were just, I don't know, trying to get like some brownie points with the boss, saying, Vader's going
to
pay.
Trying to do business.
Vader's not going
to
pay. Don't worry. I'll call my friend later and be like, how come you and you sending your little rats after me? What's going on? But fine. I shouldn't make jokes, but I'll use it at some point probably. Yeah. Craig, are you okay? You've had a long week.
A long, long week. So I've got, it's 9 p.m. here. And I've got out of bed to do this. That's how bad this week is. I've just been sick. It feels like forever. And we moved out of our house on, I think it was Tuesday. It was Wednesday it was. And it was a huge build-up to that, get everything out of the house and all the rest of it. And woke up the next day and just feeling like shit again. And it's just got worse and worse and worse. So, yeah, I'm just... In a bad way. And on top of that, we had some other news today in the family with somebody else falling sick quite badly. And it's been like, ugh. It's just been a terrible, terrible week. But today specifically, a terrible day. But yeah, anyway. So I've had to move out of our house. And we're currently in a rental house opposite our new house while work is being done. And when I say work is being done, we had like 9 people on site today, different tradesmen all doing their bit, and it's just crazy, absolutely crazy. But what I had to do is move my stuff, obviously, out of my workshop, and I've had to set up a temporary workshop. It's probably going to be 6 to 8 weeks before my workshop is fully ready, where I can move all my stuff in, set everything up. So I thought maybe we could chat about the minimum required, because there's lots of listeners who maybe just be starting, or you know they're considering starting to make knives. So the minimum required. So I'll tell you what I've done. I've set up a table in the basement of this house. It's just one like office desk, IKEA desk, which is bolted down, so it's not going anywhere. I've got 3 things on there, and see if you guys can guess the minimum requirement that my particular usage would be.
Okay. Well, even heat kiln, I would say.
Yeah.
Kiln.
Well, actually not. Because the way I work in batches with my restaurant orders is I have a lot already done with regards to heat treated. So I've got a couple of hundred heat treated blades ready to go. So, you know, that was prep before moving. So it's quite simple. So I've got a really simple setup at the moment of a grinder, a drill press, and a buffer. All I've got access to for the next sort of 6 to 8 weeks. Yeah, and I think I'll be fine. I said I've got loads of blades now already heat treated, ready for grinding. So I think I'm going to be good. But it's weird to just go down to this basement and see this like IKEA desk with these three machines on it. It's like that's it. You know, coming from my workshop, which was loaded to the rafters with mainly stuff I didn't need. But yeah, it's quite strange. But sure. I haven't actually been able to use any of it yet because I've been in bed all day. But
what do you think the sickness is?
I'm pretty sure that my immune system is just shot, as probably most people's are at the moment, because they're, you know, we've had, you know, 2 years of not really mixing, you know, in big sort of social occasions. Not, you know, we're not picking up these little bugs and stuff, are we? So now. The kids have started school. They're bringing home everything. And they're getting sick for like a day or two, but you know, not bad. They're getting a little sniffle or a little cough. You know, they still continue going to school. But it's just affecting me hugely. And I've gone from one thing to the next for the last, I'd say maybe 2 months. Yeah. And my wife too. And, you know, we were talking earlier saying, you know, I can't remember when one of us wasn't sick. Really can't, over the last few months. And it's just like, geez. But, yeah, today's been particularly nasty. Yeah, anyway, so that's where I am. So, yeah, minimum setup of a workshop. And it'll be interesting to see how that maybe changes the way I work a bit as well. So, yeah.
Sure.
Well, how was your you performed on last Friday? How did the performance go?
Oh.
This is bad.
I was feeling sick as a dog. There were three bands on, and we were headlining, if you like. We were going on last. We were like the main lineup, I suppose. And whilst the other two bands were on, I had like an inhaler with me, like a steam inhaler. I'm doing that, and I'm taking like lots of pills, and I'm just like, oh, please, just let me get through it. And it went once you're on stage and you start, you know, that's all you're thinking of. You don't think of anything else. So, you know, we just got through it. But it was fine. It was good. It was a crazy place. It was literally in the middle of nowhere on the side of the road, and it was just full of bikers. And it looked like a set from like a Nashville dive bar. You know, I was expecting a net to come down over the stage to stop the bottles being thrown at us. It was a really crazy place. But the people, they were lovely. Excuse me. The first band were meant to go on at 8 o'clock, 8 p.m. And it was 8:20, and you know, the owner was just milling around. You know, he hadn't told us anybody to start yet, because I was doing the sound for the three bands as well. And about 8:20, he comes up to us and said, "Right then, guys, your food will be ready in 10 minutes." I'm like, "Sorry, what?" So then you see they put all these tables together. Big white tablecloth comes off, and they gave us like 3-course dinner, like 20 minutes after we were meant to start. So the first band didn't go until about 9:30. We didn't leave the place till 3 a.m.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It was just like... Oh, my God. And it was busy there as well. You know, even at 3 a.m., it was still busy. It was a crazy... It was the best gig we've... You know, the best show we've done in the
What
best
did they serve you?
So we had like a charcuterie board to start with like pickles and different meats and all that kind of stuff, breads and all that. And then we had a coq au vin. With like loads of French fries too. So this is all heavy shit as well. Then they come up with a cheese board, which was like the size of, well, it was just every conceivable cheese you could think of. Loads of carafes of wine and stuff. And it was just like, geez, we're meant to be doing a show here, you know? It was crazy. But that's just great. Typical France. You know, everything stops for food. And if we're late, well, never mind, you know? Crazy. But yeah, it was a really good show. Really enjoyed it. So, we don't have another show now until the 19th of December, where I'm turning on the Christmas lights. As ridiculous as that sounds. So the Christmas lights of the village that I've just moved from, a place called Paysac, they've invited us to go. We're playing. And then we're turning on the Christmas lights, and then there's like fireworks and all that shit going on. So it's crazy. Absolutely crazy.
Wow.
Anyway.
Wow.
Shall we? in a small town, yeah. We mentioned minimum requirements, and I think what everybody's going to need is...
Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com.
Hello?
Sorry, I was on mute. I was sneezing. You know, we can get you a discount on that too. If you go to knifetalk.net/heat, we get your money off, and we'll get you free shipping in the US as well, because that'll take you to Soul Ceramics, who are a distributor of Evenheat. So spec out the machine exactly how you want it. They'll deal with everything for you and get it shipped to you with a discount and with free shipping. So why wouldn't you do that? Okay, shall we do some questions from the filthy public?
Do you think we could do a little listener feedback beforehand?
Yeah, sure.
I got some good listener feedback.
Only if it's good listener feedback.
All right, I'll get rid of the bad ones then. So if you want to interact with the show, definitely on Instagram, Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. You can DM us your questions, your dilemmas, or your listener feedback, or also your beefs. We're going to talk about beefs later. But Nuts Connie Hansen writes, "Thanks for a lot for what you guys do. The relief from the last show made me laugh so hard that a woman stopped me when I walked the dog and asked me if I was all right. I love you guys." People seem to like the role-playing.
The role-playing. Do you know what's been lovely to see this week? Spotify did the annual sort of look-back thing where people, you know, people get to see what they've been listening to this year and how many minutes and all that kind of thing. I've seen the amount of people who've tagged us with Knife Talk on, in their top 10 of things they listen to on Spotify. And you can see the amount of minutes they've listened to it, wasted listening to us and so on. It's mad. It's crazy.
Yeah, we're destroying it. We're destroying it. We're destroying people, basically. So Old Mate and Sasso wrote, the comment about the levels today, people were, I guess Tom, the hand king, said that we sound quiet in the headphones when they're working. And we got a couple of people piped up. So Old Mate and Sasso said, the comments about the levels today was spot on. KTP is always quieter than other podcasts, including pro-produced ones. I resent that comment part that I listen to. I've noticed ads being louder than the spoken segments previously, but that has improved. The mastering house should be normalizing levels of breathing. Compression seems fine. I haven't noticed widely differing dynamics. Blah, 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 blah. I definitely encourage you to A/B it alongside. Craig does a great job all the same. So there was a couple people who wrote up saying that. I personally think it has to do with what they're listening through. Like if they're not, I think that. Because I listen to it on iTunes, and I've never had a problem. But
yeah, basically, any service people listen to will have their own sort of mastering way. So when the file goes to them, they'll all be normalized and mastered specifically for that channel. So I do things specifically for Spotify. Then that file then goes off to all the other, you know, Google Podcasts and iTunes, all the rest, and they, you know, automatically, machine does what needs to be done to them. But we're doing the maximum we can without it being clipping and without it, you know, distorting like that, you know? So it's, you know, we're doing what we can. Hopefully it sounds good. I don't see
it. Yeah, I mean, yeah. They're not bitching about the content, which is, I mean, that's ultimately better, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And then this is a nice one from listener Dustin Sheffield. He's sent in a number in the time. He says, dear life-changing podcast. That's right. If it wasn't for you guys saying to join local groups, I wouldn't have gotten involved with the Blue Mountain Blacksmith Guild. If I hadn't done that, the leader wouldn't have been able to recommend me for a fabrication/blacksmithing job. So thank you, especially Jeff. I kept hearing you say a lot of these knife makers haven't worked in metal shop productions, and it shows. So now I'm in the Black Boogie Right Angle Grinder Club and loving it. So we're changing lives, ladies and germs.
Good to hear. Good to
changing
hear.
Lives. And I one last, now that Thanksgiving, we were talking about Thanksgiving cooking. I have one story from Mark LeBlanc. He had a story that he had to tell, and he says, in 2008, my first Christmas with my now second wife, it was my turn to receive the family for a Christmas dinner, 22 people in all. I decided to impress everyone by cooking a turkey in a garbage pail. Oh. It's a method where you put a spike in the ground, place the turkey on it, potatoes around the bottom. You put the metal trash can over the whole thing and make a fire around the can. Usually 2 to 3 hours is enough to cook the turkey. The morning of the dinner, it was negative 30 degrees outside, so I thought it would take a longer to cook. So after 6 hours of maybe too much fire, I lifted the can. All 22 people standing around waiting to see the super, what would emerge from this strange method. The fucking bird was gone. Burnt
Phoenix
to a small
from the
piece
flames.
The small bird was gone, but to a small charcoal turkey. And 10 pounds of potatoes wrapped in aluminum foil were now empty balls of aluminum foil. Imagine the look on everyone's faces as I shit my pants.
6 hours.
Oh my God.
Fucking lifted. He lifted the can and there's nothing there. He cooked it all to smithereens.
Surely, even if it's cold outside, a flame is a flame. It's going to be the same temperature.
What the fuck do I know about cooking in a garbage can? I don't know anything about it.
Yeah,
and last but not least, James Lang says, listening to the latest episode, 1,000% need more role playing in future episodes. So,
we shall try our best, as we always do.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do some questions then. This first one is from Tim Fisher, and again on Instagram. And as Jeff said, you can contact us via DMs on Instagram, and we are Knife Talk Podcast, I believe. Tim Fisher says, "Hey, I wondered if I could ask a question on the show. I recently finished a chef's knife, then realized when testing that I left it a little thick behind the cutting edge. It's fine for onions and soft things, but it wedges when cutting carrots. Do you think it's worth trying to thin it out more from here? And if so, how would you do it safely since it's already been fully sharpened? Could I use a Tormek-style grinder or even whetstones if there's not a safe way to use the 2x72? Or do I just chalk this one down to experience?" So he's finished the knife. He sharpened it. Then he's realized that maybe the geometry isn't quite right. It's still a bit thick. What will you guys do? Mareko, what's your suggestion there?
I have definitely come up against this, and ideally I want to try to catch it sooner than later, which means before I start hand sanding and doing any of the finished etching and any stuff, I get in there with calipers at the very least, if not taking the knife home and cutting with it to get a feel for it, and then if at that point it needs more taken off, then I'll do that. But if I've gone beyond that and then I... I just did this recently. I had a friend who I sold a knife to a long time ago, and he had sharpened it over time, and he wanted me to kind of clean it up and refurbish it a little bit. And part of that was thinning out the knife, and because it was super thick, because he had done a lot of his own hand sharpening and brought it up from the thin geometry it originally was up into the thicker cross section. And so that is, it came to me sharp. And so the first thing I did was rip the edge off. And when I say rip the edge off, basically I'm just rubbing it on some 220 sandpaper, and that's enough to dull it that it's not going to cut you. And I just rub it right onto the sandpaper. And then at that point I feel pretty safe, handling the knife and grinding it and everything the way I normally would. So then I just got it back on the machine and started grinding away as I normally would, and thinned it out, and then got back in there I actually did cut some stuff with it, and then as long as I felt good, which I did, then I move on and finished out the knife the rest of the way. So my biggest thing was, if you get to the point after the knife is already sharpened, I would just take the edge off. Even after hand sanding, sometimes there's a little bit of an edge on a knife, and I'll immediately take that off, because the sharpening is actually the very last thing I do, and I do not need to accidentally cut myself somewhere along the way getting the knife to that finished point. And so sometimes I'll take the edge off 3-4 times throughout the making process, because I'm always just like pushing that geometry to where it's basically a cutting edge. And then, you know, pull it back, continue working, and then, yeah. So I think just pull off that cutting edge, do what you need to do to thin it back out, and then refinish it and sharpen it.
Yeah. I find if you've got any Scotch-Brite belts, I find, whereas I'm normally grinding sort of edge up, if you put the spine up, so it's not coming towards the cutting point, and just sort of roll that edge along there, it dulls it super, super fast. And you can get back to, sorting out that geometry again. But yeah, definitely dull it first. You'd want to be using, a really sharp blade with any sort of grinder, I suppose. Jeff, any suggestions there?
Well, I think the idea of trying to preserve the edge while working on it, it's not really going to be to your benefit, even if you didn't hurt yourself. It's just like, it's never, you're going to always lose a little bit. But I mean, I've done that with, actually, because the the Broadbeck as a long platen. I've used it going down the edge so that the heel is at the top and the point is at the bottom, and I'm able to kind of go side to side. Yeah. And then I can kind of thin it down that way. But, yeah, I would, what you guys were saying, take a dull it down, rework it, and there's no point in trying to save the edge. It's, you'll get it. You'll figure it out.
Well, and I'm just to back up to what I was saying. When I'm saying rip the edge off, I'm not saying take a ton of material off. Just the bare minimum you need to take off to dull it, and usually that's like maybe 5/1000ths of an inch. And so, I think if he's concerned that he's going to lose a bunch of like heel height or edge material, I think that's not the reality. It doesn't take much to dull a knife. Especially when you're rubbing it against sandpaper. So make it safe for yourself, honestly. I mean, that would be my advice. Biggest thing is be safe.
Who wants to take the next question?
I can take it. If I can find it. Shoot, where is it? Okay, there you go. This one's from ETB Cutlery. He says, my question is in regards to steak knives. We spend our entire time making chef's knives that we hope to only ever be used on a proper plastic or quality wood cutting board. How does the technique for edge geometry need to change when making a steak knife that will be scraped along a plate and used heavily? Should I not sharpen them and just grind to a fine edge? Would love some input before I start my first set of steak knives.
Well, you definitely want to sharpen them.
Definitely.
Ground to a fine edge, it's going to be a lot more delicate because you've got no sort of support behind that edge. So, yeah, you definitely want to sharpen them. And, I mean, most of my steak knives are going to restaurants. So it's just sort of educating them, really. So I tell them to get ceramic hones and just a quick couple of whips of them each time before they put them away each evening. Or if they do or not, I don't know. But if you're using a steak knife, it's not like you're not battening through, big logs of wood. They're cutting through steaks. So you should be good. I mean, yeah, just make sure that they're honed regularly. And, I've never had an issue myself. And I supply to, countless restaurants, really. But yeah, you definitely do want to put an edge on it rather than just grinding down to that super, super fine edge because that'll be way too delicate.
Yeah, it's you're also cutting steaks and stuff like that is not as rough that you don't have to go bananas. And the other thing is sometimes I've kind of stopped making sure that the edge goes all the way to the end of the knife, because when you're holding a steak knife, you're never going to get that heel of the steak knife to touch anywhere.
Yeah,
so you don't that part doesn't have to be a razor blade. But I don't go crazy, and when I sharpen them, I sharpen them to like 400 grit, and then a little bit of buff, because you do want a little bit of tooth. It doesn't need to be a mere finish razor, because you do kind of want those micro serrations to kind of help you cut through whatever you're cutting through. It'll help. Mm-hmm. And then they are going to be dulled when you hit that plate, but you'd be surprised. I don't think that there's not as much use when you're using a steak knife. Not an edge use. Not as much abuse as you think.
What do you think he's maybe concerned? I mean, obviously he said, like, coming into contact with ceramic plates, but do you think he's concerned about bone, too?
I mean, he's cutting through. I mean, I thought you were supposed to, like, cut around the bone.
Well, I mean, I feel like even when you are cutting around the bone, you still come into contact with the bone a bit, trying to cut the meat off. That's what I was just asking.
I was trying to figure out a bone joke.
A bone joke, me too.
We were both. That's our silence was Craig and I try to figure out a good, a bone joke.
Well, I was trying to set you guys up.
I know. We fucking sucked. We sucked at it.
I think Craig. I 100% agree, though, that you definitely got to sharpen them. Just being super thin is not going to be enough. And I don't know if it's not clear if these are for personal use or if they're going out to somebody else, but I think you also gotta, educate those people that because they're cutting on a surface, they're going to want to, if they don't already have, like Craig said, like a ceramic hone or even a simple stone, to hit the knives against, to put a fresh edge on, they are going to dull really fast, and they're probably going to come back at you and be like, what the fuck? I just spent all this money on these steak knives and they're already dull. And it's like, yeah, no shit. So you got to spend a little time educating them.
Whether they take those into account or not, that's, you know, you've done your due diligence, I suppose.
Yeah.
I once talked to Jimmy DiResta about those.
Ooh.
That's so right. Fancy. I got the fucking direct. I got the hotline.
The red phone.
And, pardon me?
The red phone.
I got the number. We call him right now if you want to put him on the line. He's on five podcasts at this time around now. But because he had one of those little stones that does the tiny serrations. It's like it'll give you like, you know, 2 inches of serration, and you can buy them. They're hard to find, but like you just gotta bump it up against one. I think they're like diamond. They're like shaped. And then you just bump your knife up, and you can do like an inch or two of tiny serrations. They're kind of hard to find, and they're not cheap.
So it does a bunch of serrations at once as you grind.
Right, like an inch or two. Like they have them. It was hard to find, and he said he found one once. And I know he used them for like, I think his little knives. And I thought that would be kind of cool if you could have. But the problem is if you don't have a straight steak knife, and then you wanted to do... If you wanted to do the, you know, like a one-stop bump on the serrations, you can't really do it evenly if you have a curved front belly of the knife. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? We're getting to, what is it, steak knife talk? Jesus Christ.
I do think serrations, though, would be, even though, like, I don't know. I think a lot of people kind of don't like serrations on steak knives, but honestly, because of the function of them coming into contact with ceramic plates quite often, serrations where, like Jeff was saying, you don't need them back by the heel, but out towards the tip more, where the knife is more in contact with the plate. I think it would honestly really make good sense to have serrations out there.
There's two schools of thought in the restaurant biz. Okay. One is they don't want to sharpen shit. And number two, they don't want to ruin their plates. So, because a lot of places, like, you know, they'll get their plates made. Like, it's not just like, you know, run down to like the,
I see.
You know, so there's the delicate part. And the other thing is a lot of places, sorry, Craig, I mean, in the United States, at least, is people walk with them. Mm-hmm. So like I've had conversations with restaurant people about how you prevent people from stealing them. And it was like, they were just trying to figure out, some restaurant I know, what they do is they'll collect all the steak knives before they give you the bill, you know? So they count, like, behind the scenes, they know how many steak knives are on the table. Sure. But people fucking steal shit, dude. Jeez. They walk with that stuff. That's a big problem. And then what? All of a sudden, when I got to call Craig Lockwood up and say, hey, get out of bed and make me a couple more steak knives.
We need another 2 dozen. Fine with me.
Yeah. These fucking thieves, they're the worst. When I was a kid, I hate to say it, I used to steal napkins from restaurants.
Like the cloth napkins?
Yeah. For some reason, I thought I wanted like a collection.
Weird kid.
It was such a stupid. It was so stupid because I didn't even put them in the wash because I was so afraid my mom was going to catch me. So I had like 10 or 15 disgusting napkins.
No football cards or Pokemon or anything. It was just dirty napkins.
Like, and I couldn't tell where they were. You couldn't tell where they're from. They were like a white one and then a fucking red one. And it's just like this pile of fucking dirty laundry. I don't know what I'm all of a sudden I'm looking at it all. I'm like, you dummy. You're just bringing laundry home and they're not going to clean it. What are you doing? I should have stole fucking knives.
You didn't
show
it to anybody?
I was so embarrassed. Who are we going to show it to? It's so embarrassing. It's the most embarrassing, stupid. I mean, I had this like bolt of lightning thought of like, what are you doing? What is the end result? What is the end game of this? What are you going to open up your own restaurant with like fucking stolen napkins all mix and match? It's ridiculous.
Right. Let me tell you this a sec.
Combat Abrasives makes the world's best abrasive belts for knife makers. Available in any size at unbelievable prices. Go take a look at combatabrasives.com and get 15% off with promo code KNIFETALK15. Do it now.
Do it now, definitely. definitely. Mareko, do you want to take the next one from Snaremore?
Snaremore. This one is from Snaremore. It says, G'day, you handsome bastards. I have a question for you. What do you reckon are the best knife-making classes available in the U.S.? I often hear you mention the New England School of Metalwork. Do you have any suggestions on the West Coast? I'm interested in both forging and stock removal and really want to get some in-person instruction to improve my technique. Another question, how close to the final shape do you forge your knives? I've heard people say to leave some fat for the grinder, but I've also seen some folks forging amazing finished looking pieces that just need a bit of bevel refinement after heat treat at the edge. Curious what your consensus is. Okay, so first question, West Coast schools.
I got nothing.
What do you think?
I wouldn't have a clue.
I was going to try to look something up. I don't know offhand. I know that there was a few places in
Arizona,
Colorado.
Yeah, in Arizona, there's the, desert. Don Wynn actually has a class coming up right now.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. But it's the, I'd have to look it up. And I can't remember the name off the top of my head. It's Desert something. Desert.
Is that Rich Greenwood's place?
Yeah, Desert Metal Craft. So if you go to Desert Metal Craft, all one word on Instagram, they got a link on their website. They're in Arizona. And then there's actually another spot.
Roger LeBrash. That's right. Grizzly Forge. One in Arizona, yep. Too. And he has like Nick Rossi come down.
Yeah. So I think Desert Metal is in Tucson. And then LeBrash is in Phoenix.
And then Travis Wirtz has a hammer in every so often, right?
Yeah, he has a hammer in every March, and that's kind of a small, quaint thing. So you got to try to get in connection with him sooner than later. Trying to think, if you check out the California Knife Makers Association, they could probably have some better resources regarding the West Coast.
You got to join organizations around there. You have to find like-minded people, and then that's like Dustin Sheffield got hooked up with a group out there. There's going to be, look at Abana, go join the ABS. The ABS has links to what people do. The Abana has like a resource. When you're a member of Abana, it has a resource of what people are doing in the areas. Sure. And they have, a lot of times, they'll have like who's teaching classes.
Right. Well, and on the West Coast, that's the NWBA, which is the Northwest Blacksmithing Association. That goes all the way from California up to Washington, in Idaho. I don't know the whole region. But last person I can think of is Salem Straub, who's not only going to be teaching at the Center for Metal Arts again this year, but he offers private lessons at his shop. He's obviously super talented and a great resource. That's what I got.
Second
right
part of that then
classes.
Was about how close to final shape do you forge? So Mareko, this is for you.
I mean, you're the forger. Let's be honest.
100% record I've got of knocking them out quickly. That's another story. Mareko. Anyway, come on now.
Yes. It really depends on what kind of effect I'm trying to achieve. If it's going to be a clean monosteel blade with no forge texture or anything, I want to leave a little bit of room for grinding because I got to get through all that forge texture. Now, if it's a brute to forge knife, then I want to forge a lot closer to finish dimension. Like these bench knives I just sold recently, I forged them so close to finish dimension and profile that I literally only had to sharpen them. But when it comes to my Damascus, again, if you're wanting the pattern to be all nice and clean, and I think it was last episode or the episode before, we talked about some people playing with mixing brute to forge with Damascus. Actually, Elian LeBlanc does a really exemplary job of doing brute to forge Damascus. But if you want to get through all that decarb and all that forge scale, you again have to account for a little extra meat on the blade. So it really depends on the effect and the aesthetic that you're trying to achieve. You see makers like, especially people like Mike Quisenberry. He forges a Bowie knife, and it looks like it's literally it looks like it's already been ground. Or Lin Ray, the stuff is so clean. But when you're working with monosteel, you can get away with forging a little bit closer to finish, finish dimension. But there's always there's a little bit of room that they're still accounting for, a bit of grinding to clean up ricasso areas or down at the heel or all that kind of stuff. So, because you, yeah, there's decarb to account for as well in the finished piece. After all the forging as well as the thermal cycling and the finished heat treating, you want to account for any kind of decarburization on the surface of the material. Any of the surface that was in contact or exposed to oxygen at high temperatures is going to decarburize, which means carbon is leaving that portion of the material at the surface. And so you want, I like to give myself like a buffer zone of like 20 thousandths of an inch, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it definitely counts. And but it's still pretty tight. But again, you know, I think it really comes down to experimenting yourself. Honestly, I've taken plenty of blades too far, and I'd be like, shit, okay, I guess I got to back it off because I'm not getting through the decarb, and it's making some of these the work look kind of shitty. You know, who's chuckling?
Yeah,
what's so funny?
I'm sorry. I apologize.
Well, what's funny? Let's hear it.
Well, you really want to know? I had to mute the mic because I had this giant fart. And all I could think of is I fucking should have just not muted it, and exactly. It was so loud
that would have been
hilarious.
That would have been a perfect hit in the post with a fucking giant fart from Jeff.
Dude, I thought, how rude would it have been if I just let out this enormous fart in the middle of your talk about
you should have done
decarb?
It. Oh my god!
And it started giggling. And I'm sorry. I apologize. It was
have you guys? Have you guys watched the Beatles documentaries Get Back this week yet?
I hear it's long.
Oh, it's incredible. I'm on my way through watching it for the second time.
Isn't it like just 8 hours long?
Each one is 2.5 hours, and there's three of them.
Oh, it's a docuseries?
Yeah, it's incredible. But it just reminded me of one bit in it. So that like it's crazy to see. They come in it like they treat it like a job. They go into the studio. They got this month basically to make Let It Be the album, and they treat it like a job. So they come in at, you know, 9 o'clock, and Ringo's given, you know, a glass of wine immediately, a glass of white wine. It's just really, there's this one point where they're all sitting around and they're all talking, they're having a meeting about something. And Ringo doesn't say much at all. He just gets on with his job. It's quite funny. He just goes, "Ooh, I've just farted." He says, "I thought I should tell you because you're going to find out anyway." And they didn't even acknowledge him. They all just stood up and walked away from him and carried on the meeting. And it just shows him sitting in the corner with a glass of wine and a big smile on his face after a big fart. It's brilliant.
Farts are funny. I really should have let that one fly.
Should have. Yeah. Craig, I'm not taking any more. Or it's going to be a while, I think, before I take more recommendations from you, though, about watching stuff. I watched that Maid series on Netflix. You suggested that, right?
Dark, isn't it? Yeah.
It's fucking heartbreaking through the whole fucking thing. And what was gnarly for me, I didn't, you know, I just took what you said, and I didn't even really read the caption. My wife and I started watching it, and from episode one, it's just, it's rough. It's super rough, but you were like, it was great. And I was like, oh, man, this is a lot more different than I thought it was going to be. And what was really hard for me and kind of triggering is like, that's kind of like the shit that was going on between the maid and her baby daddy. And all, like, that was a lot of shit I grew up going through.
Wait, what's the name of the show and to avoid and what is it about?
it's called Maid on Netflix. And so
it's gritty and dark. It's traumatic, but it is very, personally, I think it's very good, but it's
very good, gritty. But be prepared for like some tough scenes for sure.
Yeah.
And it's not like any gnarly like rape scenes or anything. It's just like people being really fucking shitty to each other. And there's like a child caught in the middle of all of this, and it's hard to watch, especially if you got young kids, or especially if you grew up around that kind of shit.
Yeah.
Like I did.
Well, speaking of tough scenes, maybe we should go into tough scenarios.
Okay, let's hear
that's it. That's a segue. But before we get into tough scenarios, don't we have something to? Do we have anything to? No.
What are we talking about here? am I missing something?
Well, what's? No. Before we talk about the tough scenarios, I just want to tell everybody else: you're sending me in beefs for the All Beef Review. That's the end of the year show. I want you to keep sending them in. Keep sending in the beefs. It will be an All Beef Review. We do it every year. This will be the fourth annual one. It's my favorite show of the year. End of the year with all your bitchings. And I wanted to give you some examples, quick examples of beefs. You guys are sending in good ones. I want more. Here is a beef. I don't like the way people focus their energy, okay? The way people focus their energy, fighting people on the internet, recreational outrage, fashionable social consciousness, high school dropout free-thinking brain trusts, miter-cut geniuses, lazy boy political scientists, fast food gourmands, Facebook pharmacists, YouTube bureaucrats, and toilet seat athletes. You should be focusing your energy on bettering yourself and your family. That's it.
Nice.
So that's one. And then other people who, and then here's another beef, people who write or say, there, I said it, like you're planting the flag of dissent, and lightning bolts, mountains crumble, and the world stops spinning. This is a desperate cry for attention in a vacuum of nobody caring. Nobody. Nobody. Hmm. So send in your beefs to the All Beef Review. There was a couple, beefs. Cool. So
Before we go on to these tricky situations, these tricky dilemmas, we received a message from Emily, our friend over at Dharma Steel. And do you know they do the chef invitational where they have an award ceremony for the best knife and so on? They're doing the Dharma Steel Knife of the Year. Knife of the Year 2021. So you can have your say. I'll put the link down in the description. Head on over to dharmasteel.se and search for their Dharma Steel Knife of the Year. Find out all about that. It's gonna be pretty cool, I think. And remember, you can also get your discount as well by using Knife Talk on checkout once you have an account at Dharma Steel. So head on over, dharmasteel.se. They make some beautiful, beautiful steels.
They sent some nice stuff to the winners of the DCI.
Hats, did they really?
Cups and awards, and it was a nice gift package.
Nice.
Could have, three they didn't send to. But could have.
We could have had an award for the best podcast at the event, surely.
Number one. I mean, Emily, if you're listening,
you have our addresses. That's all we're saying.
You have our addresses. A little cup here.
Okay, let's have some tricky dilemmas.
I wouldn't be mad about it. Fine. Okay, here's tough scenarios and dilemmas answered honestly or phony. The first one comes from our friend Leonardo Lee. I have a dilemma. I got a lot of handyman work. He does a handyman work every so often. A neighbor got me to fix a few things for him. Which I did.
Oh, right. So he's not a gigolo. He's not a gigolo. He means literally
not a euphemism for like jerking someone off, I don't think.
The handyman.
That's what he's called. That's a Randy man.
Hey, man. Hey, can I get a handyman? Starting off strong.
Okay.
That's not what it means. A neighbor got me to fix a few things for him, which I did, and I billed him 60 pounds. Wait, I don't know if that's pounds or euros. I'll say it's pounds.
I think he's very British, isn't he, Leonardo?
He then came around and gave me 50 pounds. Oh, wait, so I billed him 60 pounds, and he came around and gave me 50 pounds. Months later, he asked me to do some other things. I don't know why I'm laughing now.
Other things.
I'm a problem. Months later, he asked me to do a few other things, and then I billed him off. I don't know why I'm laughing. I'm sorry, Leonardo. Then I billed him 100 pounds. I'm sorry. I got problems. I got tears streaming down my face. I fucking primed this poor bastard. Then he did a few other things. I built him 100 pounds, and he only gave me 70 pounds. Do I ever work for him again or raise my prices considerably and make him pay in advance? P.S. I've already decided not to work for him, so let's see what you guys think.
Well, obviously, the guy sounds like some kind of jerk anyway, so... Like, what the fuck is that?
People do that.
If you're billing somebody, they need to pay you the billed amount. So you just say, hey, you're short here. What's going on?
I told you this story that the guy showed up with his family. He's picking up the knife and he palmed me the money.
Yes.
With his whole family. And then I counted the money and it was fucking short. Two people have fucking done that to me. What do? You say something in front of the whole family? Hey, man. Come on. Fucking fuck these people. I hate people who are
I wouldn't
that.
Be giving him another handy. That's all I'm saying.
I don't want another handy man. A handy man. Come here, handy man.
Yeah, I think you stop doing that.
Yeah, you
got to.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, you make them pay in advance.
You got to let them know. You got to
I think that's what prostitutes do anyway. So I think that's like the normal service. Right.
That is a handy woman. Handy man. Okay. This one comes from... And Leonardo, I'm sorry. I read that in a way and just... I'm back to the fart, man. I can't help it. Sia Knives. All right, here's another dilemma. You're at a hammer-in and your most favorite... your most favorite and looked-up-to maker is there. Your hero is there. He or she is about to do a demo... which would include you and a few other makers. It's a dream come true. Right before you start, you try to squeeze out a fart and accidentally shit a little. Now, do you stay with the poo in your pants and live out your dreams of forging your favorite maker, or do you dip out to the bathroom to fix your pants? Note that if you go to the bathroom and miss out on this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. So.
There's other concerns here if you're just shitting yourself.
What are the other concerns?
I mean, change your diet, a bit of roughage, maybe some bran, maybe. I don't know.
That doesn't happen often, does it? Like, out of nervousness?
No. I know it's the phrase. No, I shit myself. I don't know. I've never been close. That's all I'm saying. But what you do in that situation, you've got to go clean yourself. You can't stand next to somebody just shit in your pants.
Because all of a sudden they're going to think, who stinks? This fucking guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to duck out.
Yeah, that would be the concern. At first I was wondering, maybe like it depends on how much you shit in your pants. But you don't want to be that guy that smells like fucking shit. Because that could, that could close down opportunities for anything ever in the future. Never fortune with that guy again. He smells like shit.
Yeah. Okay, any more?
Yes, I have a couple more. I actually have one that I starred. I'm trying to find it.
Quality content, this, folks.
This one comes from Nolly Knife Company. My dilemma this week... was absent-mindedly wiping a chef knife off on my pants while wet sanding, and now I was too late, and I was wearing cargo pants with an exposed zipper on the side, and I had to start my 2000 grit finish all over again.
Oh,
jeez. Oops.
Yeah. So, don't do that.
Is that a beef more than a dilemma, I suppose?
Right. Yeah, I didn't really think that one through. Okay, here it is. Sun Disc Knives. Here's a tough scenario that I find myself in a bit. He finds himself in this scenario a bit. I'm a part-time hobby maker. About 1.5 years ago, my wife and I moved overseas for her work. I'm now on leave with my full-time job, and I'm still making knives part-time when not caring for two kids. I'm not trying to make a living, but I do sell knives from time to time to cover my costs. I have several close friends in small expat communities where we live and have given them chef knives as gifts. Several new people have joined the community and constantly remark about how nice my knives are and then that they'd like them or they would like one. I tell them my price, which is very modest, under $200 for an 8-inch chef knife from AEBL with local stabilized woods. Jeez. Initially, they're all fine with the prices, but now it seems like many of them are waiting for me to offer them a free one as a gift. While I'm friendly to them, they aren't friends. How do I tell them that they won't be getting a free knife and they need to buy one if they want one? So somebody wants the fucking friend special.
Yikes. I think you don't tell them. You just don't make them one unless they fucking pay you. And yeah. $200 is insanely reasonable for
right.
a knife like that.
I think you just say to them, look, I'm, you know, out of the blue, you know, not when this conversation is brought up. Just mention the fact that you want to give this a go and you want this to be a business and, you know, you're looking for, you know, new customers, that kind of thing. So I think they're reasonably priced. I think it'll go well. And just see what the reaction is. And, you know, if they are friends, they'd want to support you in your sort of endeavors anyway. And maybe they'll say, oh, hey, look, I'll buy one. And if they don't, then you know that they're not willing to pay anyway. So then just, you know, just don't make them one. Maybe.
Sounds like maybe a good role-playing exercise.
What do you think? So yeah. Who are you in this situation?
I'm gonna be the shithead friend.
You're the shithead friend. Okay. So you call me up. Call
I'm
me up.
I'm calling you. I'm calling you.
Hello, reasonably priced knives. How can I help you?
Hey, Craig, it's me, Jeff. How are you?
Jeff, which Jeff? Which?
Jeff Fader. Come on, man.
Ah, that one. I know the. I know the one. Yes, yes.
Listen, how are you? Christmas is coming up, and you're my man. You're my man, and I wanted to get a knife for my wife. Yeah. I love your knives. Nice. I want one of your knives. But like, can you help me out on the price?
Well, excuse me. What's your budget? What are we looking at here? I've got a few orders on the go, so I might be able to squeeze you in.
$75.
Honestly, it wouldn't be worth my honestly, I've got orders coming out of everywhere. I need to, you know.
But I mean, we've been through, don't you remember that time I covered for you?
Is that when I shit myself at that event?
I mean, don't you remember that room filled with bananas? I covered for you, man. I mean, come
on. I tell you what. Bunch of orders on the go at the moment. They're all $250 for these knives. I can do you in for $200, and I'll manage to fit you in before Christmas.
All right, $100. How are we going? Perfect. Come on, man. You're like Mr. Big Shot now. You're trying to like get me on. You know, come on, man. Remember we used to go to school together.
It's a business. Come on. I mean, what happens when somebody comes into your place of work? You know, they don't try and, you know, get a discount from you. I'm trying to, you know, you know, I've got kids. This,
I'm a
handy trying to make a business.
Man. People
I tell you what.
People are trying to give me, I'm trying to give handies at a reasonable price.
$100 and a handy once a month for the next year. And we got a deal.
All right. There you go. You see, that's how you do it. You know,
never split the difference.
I'm a handy man.
The difference.
There you go.
That's good. That's good. I tell you what, let's just do a couple more questions, and maybe we'll duck out a bit earlier this week. I'm struggling to breathe here. What have we got? Matt the Wangle. Question for Craig. Is there a system or a company set up that could recycle all those cutoffs from stock removal knife makers? If not, why not? I imagine a steel supplier like Sandvik or New Jersey Steel Baron could include something to return intact scraps that could ultimately be collected and made new. Well, I know Sandvik are incredible with the recycling steel. So, I believe it's 87% of their steels that they ship are made from recycled steels. In my situation, I get all my blades now laser cut. So, you know, when they're designed, when I set up the job on the cutters, I make sure they're nested as closely as possible. So there's very little scrap. But I use a place called Eurotechni, which is in France. And I know whatever is left of that, of, you know, where they've nested, that those cutouts that are left, they do go back to Sandvik and they are recycled. So it does happen, but whether that's, you know, effective locally for you wherever you are, I don't know. Maybe New Jersey Steel Baron do something. I don't know. But excuse me. I'd say what you may be better off is finding somebody who. I don't know. It's going to be so little. I don't think for most places it would be worth their while doing simply by, you know, the time you ship it back and all stuff, you know, you should be getting very little scrap anyway. But that's all I can tell you, I'm afraid. What about you guys? I mean, Jeff, when you buy your steel in strips, I believe, don't you? So
right.
You love, like 2-inch strips, so you can just cut out from there.
I save all the scraps. I have like a bucket filled of, you know, stainless and a bucket filled with carbon steel. And I always think I'm going to do something with it. I always think that I could do something with it. You know, at some point, maybe, I don't know, maybe I'll get into like canister Damascus and I just shove it all in there. Or I don't know. Yeah. For some reason, I think that, you know, or if I wanted to get into like locking mechanisms, that this small thin pieces would be good for locking mechanisms for like a slip joint folder. So I'm always just like afraid to throw things out anyway. But it's not enough. I don't have that much scrap that it would be worth taking it to a scrap yard. I would get like, you know, $2, you know, maybe like $5 or $10, but maybe I can use it down the line.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. The biggest problem I found, especially when I was moving shop this week and completely emptying my shop out, is just belts, old, and we talked about this so many times, old belts. I had dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of them, you know, just to throw out. You know, somebody's got to come up with somebody for these belts because it's become a bit of a problem, really.
I'm creating a giant cocoon in my shop that's tarping over Cliff Dufton's lathe. I've, like... His lathe is in some sort of like chrysalis stage right now with all the belts covering it.
That's hilarious.
It's going to like transform into something. I'm hoping it's going to transform into an Anyang.
I was just saying, I've been holding on to my steel scraps because often there are some that could, especially if they're Damascus, a lot of the stuff. I'm working with is Damascus. They can be forged into either like blanks for smaller blades, or they can be ground into, you know, pleasing shapes for that could become earrings or pendants and stuff like that. When it comes to mono steel, there are depending on the thickness of the material, that determines if I keep it or not. If it's thick enough, then I kind of keep it so it could become maybe a kiridashi, or sometimes they're large enough that they could be, you know, forged or stock removed into a straight razor. But yeah, ideally someday I'd like to be able to melt it down into my own little ingot and forge out my own ingots of steel. I think that would be pretty cool and fun to. It would be a huge pain in the ass, but it'd be a lot of fun to do. But other than that, yeah, I don't really know, unless there are makers out there who are interested in collecting material for recycling and repurposing into melting their own ingots. Like, I think the best use for them is to turn them into jewelry or other small things, or just recycle it. Just recycle.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. Let me tell you about Texas Farrier Supply. TexasFarrierSupply.com, and they sell everything for the knife maker, or the farrier for that matter. Go take a look at all this stuff. They've got lots and lots, including Rhino Wet by Indasa. All the grits that you'd ever need. We use Indasa Rhino Wet because it's the best stuff out there for hand sanding. So go take a look. TexasFarrierSupply.com, and if you use Knife Talk, I believe it's Knife Talk 10, you get 10% off your order there. TexasFarrierSupply.com. Go check them out. Okay, Jeff, you've got a question there.
This one comes from Sharp on Socks. Question: I'm listening to the first episodes of Knife Talk, and Jeff, you said you were interested in integral bolsters and pocket knives. The internet never forgets. If you would write a letter to yourself in 5 years, what are the things you'd want to see then, all of you? What are you going to write to your 5 years down the line? What are you going to tell yourself?
So 5 year, it's basically like 5 year goals, things you hope to achieve or make in the next 5 years.
Yes, sure.
Okay.
For me, I think it would be to do everything in house. Just mentioned that I get all my blanks cut out, laser cut out. That can be a huge problem because there's minimum orders, and they can take months as well when times are busy. So I need to plan ahead a lot. So I'd like to think that within 5 years I'd maybe be able to do that myself. And the way machinery is sort of evolving, and you know, these big industrial machines are becoming more and more sort of not domesticated, but they're coming at a cost which is far, far cheaper as more and more people are making. I'd like to think that within 5 years I could have a machine in my shop that doesn't cost hundreds of thousands of pounds, where I could, you know, laser cut up blanks quickly, obviously very, very accurately. And I could, you know, I could make amendments to designs, you know, quickly and get them done. You know, that would be the dream for me. And that way I'm not relying on anybody else. I'm not waiting months and months for orders to come into me. And I could play around a bit more too, because I don't have to, you know, put up these huge minimum order quantities to get things my way. That's my dream, 5 years anyway.
Are you having a, would you have a hard time getting large sheet stock sent to you, or how would you do
no.
that?
No, very easily, actually. I'm quite fortunate that, you know, Thiers is quite local to here, which is dozens and dozens of factories making knives. So getting the material is actually quite easy. Sandvik have an official distributor there, so I can get huge sheets of Sandvik to me overnight quite easily.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah, nice goal, 5 years. That'd be the dream. Mareko, yourself in 5 years, where do you see yourself?
Well, and I could see real quick on yours, bringing everything in-house. You don't have to fuck with goddamn Tom. That was Tom, right?
Tim.
Oh, I don't fuck with Tim anymore.
Yeah.
Fuck no. Fuck Tim. Tim's gone.
I don't fuck with Tim anymore. No. I don't fuck with Tim anymore. That's funny.
One of my five-year goals is to get a power hammer in my shop, actually. I'd love to get a power hammer around 100 pounds just to help with Damascus forging and my blade forging. In the next 5 years, I'm hoping to get a piece. I would love to get a piece into a museum. I've kind of hinted at it over the last, probably last year or so. But I've been working on replicating some ancient weapons that haven't been replicated in almost 2,000 years. And I'm hoping to get something put together possibly soon in the next couple months. Yeah, so I need to figure out. I might have to get hold of Wes Knives up in Denmark and talk to him or about some of the museums up there, because some of these their swords are represented up there and were found in Denmark. And so it's about connecting with the right people about trying to get that work into those museums and basically side by side with the actual historical pieces. So next 5 years, I'd like to get a piece in that museum, which would be pretty fucking rad.
Very cool, yeah. Jeffrey, 5 years from now.
Well, you know, I want volume to be massively higher, and I see that being on the way. We're having talks with people in regards to kind of building the volume up, which is what I want. More being able to do more kind of colorful stuff, and then pocket knives are still in there. I've been wanting a pocket knife forever. I have one that I made a while ago that I like, but I'm doing these friction folders, but the friction folders aren't something I want to sell. The forged stuff is kind of almost like the friction folders and the tongs and stuff. It's kind of like what I like to teach. But I don't think I'd want. I just don't. I separate them out from fader knives. I still want to do a. I'd love to have a pocket knife.
With teaching, do you see yourself doing more teaching in the next 5 years?
You know, the teaching is interesting because I like doing it. It makes me better at understanding what I'm doing. I'm looking forward to going down to the Center for Metal Arts this spring. I actually just had Pat Quinn on the Full Blast podcast, and we talked about the new classes, and I'm looking forward to that. I'm also looking forward to going to Dragon's Breath Forge again. I like the teaching. I like it. It gives me some energy in a different way. And I really like preparing for it. I really like. But I don't see it the same. You know, one of the things is like I have old teachers who taught people how to make their stuff. Like Fred Chris once taught a class on making his sculpture and said to people, just don't make my sculpture. And it was like, well, they're going to make your sculpture. And there were people who were just basically making his sculpture. And I don't want that. I don't want to just make the stuff that I want to kind of separate out the stuff I do for teaching versus what I do for Vader Knives. I can see myself doing more teaching to further my education, but that's about it. I'm not like searching it out.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Why don't I'm struggling here by the minute. I'm going rapidly downhill. Why don't you guys tell everybody about the grinders that you use?
I mean, the Broadbeck. They're the best grinder. I mean, for me, they're one of the best grinders that are in the market right now, and it's my go-to grinder in my shop, and it's an incredible machine. It's super flexible. It's built by knife makers for knife makers. It's like having multiple machines just in one. All the different tool arms, the fact that it lays over horizontally as well as working in a standard vertical position. It's a really great machine. You know, what do you think about it, Jeff?
Dynamite. It's my number one machine, and I love the parts. I love the adjustment. I love the flexibility. I love the attachments. It's definitely a great machine, and Vince and Ryan are doing a great job. And if you go and put in Knife Talk, you can get the upgrade to the Moreco Platin, which is a dynamite deep dish platin that's great for all your handle sculpting and carving and grinding. And get yourself that Broadbeck, ironworks.com. Put in the promo code Knife Talk for the upgrade to the Moreco Platin. Broadbeck, ironworks.com.
There we go. What do you think, guys? Is that a show, do we think?
If you're not feeling well, let's get the fuck out of here.
Let's do that. Thank you all for listening. We shall speak to you soon.
This show is brought to you by the...
There we go.
Are you okay?
It's just my nose is streaming.
Sure.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, sorry. I'm very much aware there wasn't much energy in that show for me.
That's okay. Look, you're not feeling well. It's Christmas season. How are you gonna feel better for Christmas?
Yeah, you gotta go caroling, right?
Ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh. I know. Christmas starts tomorrow for us. We get the Christmas tree and we make it all Christmassy for the kids. I'm looking forward to it, but I'm just feeling a bit better. Today has been like the worst of all days. You know.
Will you be in the new house for Christmas?
Oh no, geez, no. We're looking for mid February.
Oh
wow!
I know.
Jesus Christ! Yeah. How much work they have to do over there?
Oh, you won't believe unbelievable amounts. But the where we are now, this house we're renting is literally I can see the house from the window here.
Oh wow! Super close.
So we're virtually right on site, you know, which is a blessing and not at the same time because we got workmen traipsing over cups of tea and cups of coffee every 10 minutes, you know, because it's so cold here as well. But no, it's good. We'll definitely be in mid February. We're at the point now, you know, picking kitchens and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's exciting, but I just wish I wasn't feeling so, you know, shitty all the time, and it just seems to be all the time late.
Do you have a gig coming up, or are you closed out for this season?
No, December 19th is the one where we, you know, Christmas lights and all that, and yeah. I'll be fine. I'm just feeling a bit sorry for myself today. So anyway, this Beatles documentary, even if you're not a Beatles fan, you've got to get on it, honestly. It's 50 years old, and it looks as if it's in like super, super HD. The colours are all like amazing. It's like, I'm telling everybody, it's not a documentary about them. It's literally you're with them because they don't do anything. They're basically they go to two different rooms because they change halfway throughout. They're just in a room and there's no like voiceover, you know. Paul now goes to make a cup of coffee. It's nothing like that. It's literally just there and you're just spending the time with them while they're coming up with these songs. It's incredible. And it turns out McCartney is the powerhouse. They're all just looking at him in complete and utter awe. And he's just rattling off these songs. And they can't keep... He's five steps ahead of them all the time. It's incredible.
Wow.
It's incredible. Just to watch it, it's incredible.
Hmm.
You guys seen anything good lately? I'm desperate need for TV recommendations because I'm not doing anything else.
Did you see Tiger King 2 yet?
Oh, no, no.
I really regret saying it, but the first few episodes are not really about fucking... They're about the disappearance of the husband.
And Carol. Because he's still in prison, isn't he? So
I don't know. I stopped. You know what the funny thing is my wife and daughter went to go do something at night. I don't remember what they went to do, but I was like, I'm going to watch it while they're not here. As soon as they came back, I turned it off like I was watching pornography or something like that.
Dirty.
And I was humiliated, but I was just like, fuck it. I'm a grown ass man. I'll watch this fucking Tiger King. And it was a little bit more like, it was a little bit less junkyard dog shit. It was a little bit more about the interview and trying to figure out what happened to the husband. And that was interesting. Okay. So, and it wasn't as trashy as I was expecting it to be.
Crime drama.
Well, I mean, it was like almost like true crime to a certain degree. Yeah. So that was pretty interesting because I guess that fucking dude who died was not the greatest of dudes. So it was really like... He was kind of a suspicious individual, you know.
Oh, right. Okay.
Weirdness down in Costa Rica, and like there's like, this whole goddamn story is the most bizarre thing in the in the world. Mm. So I was watching a little bit of that, and then my wife and daughter like the British Bake Off.
Ah, right. I think that finished this week or last week, I think, didn't it? With the winner.
Are the two people supposed to be funny ever funny? Like, there's always two characters. There's two characters, and they went from women. Two lesbians, which is
they're
fine.
They're not lesbian. One's a lesbian. One
fine,
isn't.
But they were never funny. And now they have two people who are super-duper never funny.
It's very like... British. It's a very, very British thing. So the original two women were Mel and Sue. And they had like a TV, show and, a daytime show, that kind of thing. They were very much sort of, for the mums. But Noel Fielding, who's the new one, and Matt Lucas, they're almost like alternative comedians here in the UK. And Noel Fielding is...
Which one is that one? That the bald one?
No, the one who looks like a vampire.
Oh.
You know, with the dark hair and the... Yeah. He does this show called The Mighty Boosh. And it's like the most left field out there thing. It's very, very good. It's almost like a modern Monty Python.
I just don't believe you.
Seriously. It was such a weird choice when they said he's going to be. Because it's probably like the biggest show in the UK, really. Not that I'm into it. But it really is a huge deal over here. So when they announced that he was doing it, everybody's like, really? What? But. He's obviously having to tone it down for a family audience,
He looks nervous. He looks like he knows
crazy.
He shouldn't be there.
He is. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He knows nothing about bacon.
It's almost as if they put him out there and he's like trying to like hide behind himself. Like he's like trying to shrink because he's so strange looking. And neither one of them are funny at all. I mean, at all. The girls watch. I walk in. I'm like, they are never funny. I have not one even close to laugh.
They're not funny on that. But when they do their own thing. So the other guy, Matt Lucas, who's the bald guy, he used to be in the show called Shooting Stars with Vic and Bob. Again, very sort of British comedy, and I loved it. And even now, Vic and Bob, I think they're comedy legends. And he was their sidekick on this show. He then went on to do another show called Little Britain, which I'm not sure if he made it to the States. And it was just like a piss take of, average British people. And he was, they're funny in their own way, but it was such a weird choice for them to be on Bake Off. And they can't be themselves on it.
And what is this fucking Paul Hollywood all about? What has he done in his life that's so great?
Exactly.
He just seems like such a prick.
Bit of a prick, yeah. As if his handshake is like the ultimate like gesture.
You know what my wife walks around and said? My wife My wife says this all the time, and I laugh every time. He was biting something, and he goes, "That's a tough biscuit." So she walks around the house saying, "Oh, that's a tough old biscuit," or "You're a tough old biscuit." So that's a tough old biscuit is one of our favorite things that my wife says, this terrible accent. But I don't think they're ever
it's
funny.
It's a weird show. It's
ever.
Yeah, very strange show. Mareko, what are you watching?
No. I've been watching lighthearted stuff mostly lately. We watched, what was it? Red Notice, which is a new rock movie that came out on Netflix.
Oh, I did see that. Yes. Yeah.
With Gal Gadot and Ryan Reynolds. Yeah, it's good. It's definitely entertaining. I've kind of been making friends with The Rock's stunt man. Been chatting with him about back and forth, and it was cool to watch. It was interesting. It was different watching the stunts. Or paying more attention to the stunts, knowing that I know the person doing the stunts. So it's been cool watching that. And then what did we watch? We watched Jungle.
Oh, whilst you're talking about that and with Kevin Hart in it, have you seen True Story? The new
I
Kevin
have not
Hart
seen
show?
It yet. It looks interesting. It's good.
Is it funny?
Very, very.
Is that another rough
it's
one?
It's not a comedy. The first episode, there's some funny bits, but it's not a comedy. But he's basically playing himself. He's playing a comic from Philadelphia who's huge, and all the struggles. Like it's very, very good. Sure. Very like I watched them all in 2 days.
What's it
very,
on?
Very good.
Netflix.
Netflix or Apple TV? I think it's Netflix. Yeah.
No.
Very, very good, and you'll be hooked from the first episode. When that finishes, it's one of those ones. Where you're like, oh,
you sure?
The next one.
I am sure.
I am positive you will not regret it. It's right. Very
What's
good.
What's it called?
True Story.
True Stories. I watched that fucking one episode of that fucking Cowboy Bebop. Ugh.
What's that?
I guess it was a cartoon that they made into a live action thing.
I remember watching the cartoon. It was good.
I don't listen to these people and I'm like, I don't know what the fuck. I don't trust people. I really don't trust. I'm looking forward to Curb Your Enthusiasm coming out. I save all the Curb Your Enthusiasms for Friday, so I'll watch a Curb tonight. Boba Fett. I'm looking forward to Boba Fett. That's coming out, right? No?
Yep. The Book of Boba Fett.
That's coming out. That'll be good. You don't like that? You don't like that?
No. I'm not into like...
You're not a Star Wars guy?
Fiction stuff.
Wow.
No, not really.
Mandalorian
no.
was good.
It was very good.
I too like my science and fiction separated, but that was pretty fucking good.
Right. On that note... I'm off.
I'm all right, handyman. Feel better.
Right. Speak to you all soon. Bye all for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.